Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
President Trump has injected himself into the British election and thrown British politicians through a loop. We will get to that, but we will start the hour with the politics in Washington.
And today, Congress goes on recess for a week, one day after Democrats overwhelmingly approved and Republicans overwhelmingly rejected ground rules for an impeachment inquiry of President Trump.
Let's bring in our Friday Politics Roundtable, Domenico Montanaro, NPR senior political editor and correspondent, and Chad Pergram of Fox News, senior Capitol Hill producer there. Welcome to both of you. And Chad, let me start with you. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi once said she would only support impeachment if it's a bipartisan effort. Today she said she wanted it to be an ironclad case. Yesterday's vote, though, was not a bipartisan effort.
She has reversed herself several times. Just the fact that they had this impeachment resolution, process resolution on the floor yesterday is significant, because just a few weeks ago, the speaker had said that they weren't going to do it. I thought it was notable that the speaker actually presided over the debate, the initial part of the debate, from the dais, and then presided over the end of the vote, kind of signifying her significance. She also voted. Only a few times a year do you ever have the Speaker of the House actually casting a ballot. And that kind of informed you where she was on this. You know, the problem that she created, though, is that some moderate Democrats didn't want to vote on this because they were afraid that voters, and they represent these swing and battleground districts, might conflate this vote with actual impeachment. And there was quite a back and forth I had with the House Majority Leader, Steny Hoyer, this week, where he and Speaker Pelosi said this is not an impeachment resolution, when those of us here at the Capitol would refer to it colloquially that way. And that's because they're moderate Democrats. Although many of them, all but two, were willing to vote for this, they're afraid that these issues are going to become conflated, and it makes the politics very complicated in those 31 districts represented by Democrats that President Trump carried.
Well, Domenico, what about the politics for Republicans? Are you surprised that no Republicans supported this vote, given all of the detail that has been coming out over the last few weeks about specifically this phone call between President Trump and the president of Ukraine?
I haven't been surprised by that at all, and I don't know if you have been surprised by the myriad other things that Republicans have not gone or spoken out against President Trump on. It's not really been their MO. They understand the politics of this back in their districts. You know, as Chad's pointing out, the 31 districts that there's a Democrat in that President Trump won, a lot of that is because of 2018, where Democrats took back the House because they ousted many of these Republicans, a net of 40 seats. So when you're looking at moderates and where they are, the moderates and those swing districts are with Democrats on this impeachment inquiry for the most part. And who's left in the Republican Party are the people in a little bit more conservative to right-leaning districts who see the polling and understand that some 90% of Republicans still approve of the job the president is doing and back him entirely, thinking this impeachment inquiry is a sham or fraud or however they want to describe it.
And that unanimous vote, I think, by House Republicans is very important, because that was a signal, two directions. Number one, to President Trump, to demonstrate to Republicans and the president that they were standing four square behind the president. There were no cracks in the dam. And also sending a message to the Senate, where there have been some cracks in the dam, maybe not many, but saying, you know, Senate, you better represent us. You better speak in the same voice as we've been speaking here in the House of Representatives.
So that sentiment was behind perhaps the ranking Republican on the Judiciary Committee, Doug Collins, who had this warning for Democrats.
Folks, this ain't over. Get ready. The cloud that is dropping will be dropping on their heads, because process matters and substance will always win out in the end. And this president has nothing to worry about on substance.
So, Domenico, a little bit of applause there. Domenico, Republicans insist that they're ready to start defending President Trump on substance. Have you seen that yet?
Well, I think that one thing that they need to look at is the fact that two-thirds of voters in our latest NPR PBS NewsHour Marist poll said that it was unacceptable for the president, for any president, to ask for foreign aid in investigating a domestic political rival. So you have a majority of the country, 68% in that poll, saying that that's unacceptable. The question is whether it's impeachable. And that is a very vague, ambiguous thing. You have Republicans saying, even if there was something that was untoward there that maybe they wouldn't have done, on that it's not an impeachable offense. But that's going to be, weighed out in the court of public opinion and in Congress, in public, more so than we've seen so far over the last several weeks in the next preceding weeks coming.
And Chad, I mean, that's a fine line for Republicans to have to walk as they're defending the president, saying that something might have been wrong or unconstitutional, but may or may not be impeachable.
Right. And I talked to one senior Republican this week who indicated, and this has always been the idea, even if you read Federalist 65, where Alexander Hamilton talks about the impeachment process potentially in the Constitution. But this one senior Republican said to me, impeachment is what the House of Representatives thinks it is at any given moment. They thought that was the case with President Clinton in 1998. They certainly thought that was the case with President Nixon, Andrew Johnson. It is a moving target. It is very ill-defined in the Constitution. It's vague, and it is a political question.
Domenico, as you look at the timing of what's going to happen next, when do you expect public hearings, and when would you expect, if they do go forward with impeachment, a trial to happen in the Senate? Because we're getting very close to the Iowa caucuses.
Right. And the idea from Democrats has been that they want to do this a little bit more expeditiously than maybe if there wasn't an election calendar. Certainly, they don't want impeachment to be the thing that dominates the 2020 campaign. But let's face it, you know, President Trump is a major factor, if not the major factor, in next year's election. He's on the ballot. He was a major factor in the 2018 elections, and he wasn't on the ballot, which makes this even more heightened. And that's the fact of the matter that they are just going to have to deal with. And the facts set here are different now than in the past two impeachments in the last 50 years or so. So we are in uncharted territory where they're going to have to figure out the timeline over the next several weeks, how they're going to make the case, Democrats, to the public and to some of those wavering Republicans in the Senate. I would expect, they would hope, by the end of the year there'd be something that they vote on, but it's likely going to slide into next year.
I just want to pivot to 2020 in the few minutes that we have left. And I'm going to throw this one also to you, Domenico, which is this morning, Elizabeth Warren released her plan to pay for Medicare for all. It would require $20 trillion in federal spending. And she says not one penny in middle class tax increases. Not everyone believes that. How will it be funded? Or what more do we know about this and her strategy here?
Right. And that is her plan, to not raise taxes on middle class voters. It's a little different than Bernie Sanders' plan, who would have a little bit more of a spread the burden around. She is looking at increasing the wealth tax on people who make more than $1 billion or have more than $1 billion from 3% to 6%. Employers and corporations, their tax would go up. They'd replace essentially what they pay toward private insurance now. So those are the two main areas, an increase on taxes on the wealthy and on corporations, although some people are questioning the math, whether it would work. And, you know, frankly, there aren't the votes to pass this in the House right now, or the Senate, most likely, and maybe the House because Democrats are there. But to pass the Senate, almost impossible, because you need the 60 votes necessary to overcome a filibuster. So the likelihood of any of these things passing is very dim. And these are the kinds of details that normally get worked out in the legislative process.
You know, and we're not through the primary process here yet. And look at who endorsed Bernie Sanders the past couple of weeks. Members of the squad. You had Rashida Tlaib, Democrat of Michigan, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez with Bernie Sanders. So this might be an effort by Elizabeth Warren to kind of, you know, plow some fields in that area and into the Sanders vote. You know, but this is the potential danger that some Democrats fear about nominating someone like Sanders, or maybe Warren, frankly, who seems to be, you know, vying with Joe Biden at this stage, is that she might be too far left wing, and that might not play well in the general election. You know, you need a foil, and this is exactly what President Trump would want to run against, you know, someone like Elizabeth Warren, maybe preferring Warren compared to Joe Biden. The other thing in terms of the pay for on this, Warren talks about cutting into defense spending. Right now, we spend about 53% of all discretionary dollars. They go toward the Pentagon. Another way to crunch that with some other accounts, you get up to maybe 58-59%. And so she thinks that there's spending there that you could take away from the military to go toward that. Those in the military would say, no, absolutely not. Look, you know, we have issues in Syria. Mm-hmm. We might have issues with China. And anytime you put these issues out there, when people see a number like $24 trillion, it gives Republicans a lot of room to run down the field with that and say, we talked about how expensive the Green New Deal was. How about this plan by Senator Warren?
Just really quickly from both of you, what do you make of the New York Times Siena College poll out today on the state of the race in Iowa? Elizabeth Warren narrowly ahead of Bernie Sanders, then Pete Buttigieg, Joe Biden fourth, and the other candidates in the single digits. Domenico?
This is why national polls are just kind of things that you should sort of dismiss almost altogether when it comes to the horse race, because you've seen Biden leading for most of this year, then Warren sort of tied him and eclipsed him over the last couple of weeks, and now this poll has him fourth at 17%, with Warren in first at 22, Sanders 19, Pete Buttigieg third at 18. This is a real four-person race at this point, and it's going to be really interesting to see how they get out the vote come the voting time.
And what does a Senate trial do? What does a Senate trial do if it happens during Iowa and New Hampshire come February?
I was going to say Domenico filibustered you, Chad, so you couldn't step in, but you got it in there.
And you can't filibuster in a Senate trial.
You don't have the votes.
Domenico Montanaro at NPR and Chad Pergram at Fox News. Thanks to both of you.